This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. My guest at this time is Dr. Ronald Dworkin, who is for the past 20 years an anesthesiologist, and he's the author of Artificial Happiness, which was published back in 2006. He's written an opinion piece for Thursday's edition of Wall Street Journal's opinion page online, talking about why, in his opinion, as a perspective from the medical field, the Democratic-sponsored health care reform plan is a big mistake. And Dr. Dworkin, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
One of the things you say that's very important here is quality anesthesiologists, and despite all the talk about public option and potential rationing and end-of-life care and all sorts of things, is a dramatic cutback on reimbursement for anesthesiology. Now, that sounds like a lot of bureaucratic details, but explain how that could be a very real issue for a lot of people.
Yes, it doesn't necessarily have to be this way because of public option, but it will translate into that. What's happened is over the years, the gap between the Medicare rate of reimbursement for anesthesiologists and the private insurance rate is so large, larger than any other specialty in medicine. As a result, if the public plan goes through and the effort is to implement Medicare-based rates, then obviously the remuneration for anesthesiologists will plummet almost 65-70% enormously. And so as a result, there will be a decline in the quality of care within anesthesia and decline in the number of anesthesiologists, and this is a serious problem.
In terms of the impact this will have on care, the biggest argument is that there are too many people that don't have health care, and it's time to even the playing field and make sure everyone has access to affordable quality care. But you argue in this piece, Dr. Dworkin, that what's actually going to happen here is that the divide between those who can pay a lot and those who can't is actually going to widen. Explain why.
Yes, I mean my premise comes from my observation of human nature, which some angers people sometimes, I suppose, but it's true nonetheless. When rich people are taken care of at a hospital or anywhere, they have influence, they have voice, and they have power. And therefore, because they can make people scurry, they usually get what they want. Now, what happens is when poor people use the same facilities, they don't have the same voice and the same power, the same influence. But in healthcare, because both poor and rich are united by a common health insurance mechanism and therefore can go to the same hospitals and the same doctors, while the poor do not have the same voice and power, their allies, the rich, do have voice and power, and therefore they can influence things on their behalf. What will happen, I'm concerned, is that if the public plan goes through and it begins to push out all private health insurance, which is certainly possible, what will happen is you'll have two systems or two tiers. The rich will flee that government system, and they will set up their own private system and get the care they've always wanted. And the poor middle class will be left to languish in the government system, and they will have lost their allies, the rich and influential, to make sure that system has high quality. As a result, you have a system that's not unlike the public school system now, where the rich flee public schools. You may have very good private schools, but of course the public schools are left to languish, and you'll have the two tiers, and I'm afraid healthcare will become like that.
And of course, the pitch here is that this reform plan would cover everyone. But another thing you point out, and this is at the conclusion of the piece, is that those who you would consider the most vulnerable and the most need of great medical care, women who are giving birth to their children, are going to be among the first to suffer as a result of this plan.
Yes, I mean, there's always a danger in medicine. All medical professionals know this. It's a danger to skimp on anesthesia and obstetrics because, as I say in the article, people in those fields, if they die in minutes and seconds. There's no room for any kind of error. And my concern is in obstetrics, with the shortage of anesthesiologists or anesthesia providers in general, there'll be fewer people to cover the obstetric floors in hospitals because of the economics of the operating room. As a result, women will have to wait longer to get their labor epidurals for their pain relief. That's one bad thing. But also when there are emergency cesarean sections, if you have fewer anesthesia personnel down in obstetrics, then there's a great risk to the baby. It's more dangerous. And so as a result, people could die. Babies could die, and that's my great concern, that the shortage will come first in obstetrics, and that's where the quality of care will decline.
And Dr. Dworkin, we hear the president say on numerous occasions that just about everyone in the industry is on board with this. Hospitals, drug makers, pretty much everyone except the insurance companies, who he's portrayed in a less than flattering light. What have been the conversations around the hospitals where you are? What are people in all different roles saying about this possible legislation becoming law?
Well, you know, we're all a little confused in a way because I think everyone understands that if we want to cover more people, maybe some sacrifice has to be made, and that's fine. Doctors are willing to sacrifice and health insurance companies and everyone. But we're all a little confused because you would think that in such a big enterprise as this, you would sort of save the most expendable money first and then get to the hard stuff later. And the most expendable money would be, say, tort reform. There's a lot of money there in defensive medicine, billions of dollars, which can be put towards insuring people. You would think that would be the easiest thing first, a painless thing, because it doesn't affect care. Cut that first, and then you work your way down to the drug companies, the health insurance companies, the doctors. But there's no tort reform envisioned at all. So most of the players in medicine are very suspicious because they think that there really isn't an effort to kind of really fix the healthcare problem. It's really an effort to kind of make sure that the trial lawyers are protected and so forth. And so it's not really a good faith effort. And that's what most concerns people in the healthcare world, that it's not a good faith effort. Because if there was a good faith effort, they would do something about tort reform first and not last or never.
Well, let me ask you one final question and bring it home just a little more personally as we conclude here, Dr. Dworkin. You mentioned your 20 years as an anesthesiologist. You also mentioned the cutback in anesthesiology reimbursements through this legislation as it currently stands. Are you right now considering that if this bill gets passed as it currently stands, that you might change or leave your career?
Oh, I don't know. I like practicing anesthesia. I do, I think, a good job, and I take my job seriously. I guess everyone has to weigh their own calculation. As I said, you do go to work every day. It's a very stressful job, and it's not easy now because patients are heavier. And every day you have a face of malpractice suits where you could lose your entire life savings in one fell swoop. So one has to weigh these things. It may seem wrong to say these things, to be so upfront about it, but it's true. Every person has to weigh their future. They have their family to protect and everything, and I'll have to think about it.
Well, Dr. Dworkin, it's great to get your perspective on all this. Thank you, sir, very much for your time today.
Thank you.
Dr. Ronald Dworkin is an anesthesiologist, author of the book Artificial Happiness. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.